you very much for this introduction. I oversee basically only cancer, complementary, and alternative medicine, contrary to the center, which oversees all complementary therapies and complementary medicine research. So I work closely with NCCM when it relates to cancer CAM grants, and we are always discussing priority areas. And so it's good to kind of let you know a little bit about OCAM. Our role is to develop NCI's CAM agenda and coordinate and provide scientific and program support for grantees. We also are the liaison to other government and non-government organizations on cancer CAM research areas. And we interface with the public, with the CAM community, and with the oncology community as well. We generally oversee the CAM portfolio at NCI. However, we do not manage all the grants, of course, of cancer CAM at NCI. We just basically try to coordinate it. We mainly are interested in treatment, so we'll tell you what we do more. But basically, NCI does prevention, treatment, symptom management and side effects, management, epidemiology, and we also fund several conferences. Our main research priorities at OCAM is to identify novel therapeutics in the pharmacopoeia of traditional medical systems as defined by the WHO. And we use using complementary approaches to improve the therapeutic ratio of standard and investigational anti-cancer therapies. We also, although it's not a main priority, but we also sometimes do research on lifestyle modifications, diet, exercise, mind-body approaches, and their impact on cancer outcomes, such as response to conventional cancer therapy or survival. However, mainly like the survivorship research is done through the Cancer Survivorship Office, or any other diet exercise usually is done through another division in NCI. So we try to kind of work with them to coordinate all the research that's going on. I'll briefly let you know a little bit about funding opportunities at the NCI. Well, the research at NIH, as many of you may already know, is either extramural or intramural. What we're going to be talking about today is the extramural component, which is basically the research that's proposed and conducted by non-government scientists in research organizations outside NIH. We do give or fund extramural awards, provided through grants, contracts, or cooperative agreements. One of the mechanisms that we have is the RO3 mechanism. If anyone is not familiar with it, it's basically the small research grants or pilot studies, and I think Wendy has talked about it a little bit. It is limited to studies in a categorical program areas, so you have to have a small kind of idea. You don't have any background data about it, so you want to just study it and maybe produce some data for a publication or to give you some background data to apply for a bigger grant, an R21 or an R01. And basically, it's a two-year grant, a small grant of $50,000 a year direct for 2 years for a total of $100K for 2 years. And it's non-renewable. One of the active announcements we have is this PA 09168. And similar to the R34, but it's a much smaller funding. It's just 2 years instead of 3 years, but basically for pilot studies. And we have, I don't know if we can connect to the link. I don't think so. Okay. I think I passed. This is the R21. Also, it's a larger type of developmental project for cancer treatment and care. And it's basically to study basic preclinical or clinical complementary and alternative medicine research projects. And it's also for 2 years, and it funds direct $275,000 for 2 years that you can split either way as you wish. And it's also non-renewable. We also try to participate with other institutes, mainly NCCM or other institutes, in other announcements that they have in case they are related to cancer. One of the new ones that we just joined is the Biology of Manual Therapies, which was issued by NCCM, and it focuses on basic and preclinical research of manual therapies, such as spinal manipulations or massage therapy. We also, this announcement has two mechanisms, the R01, which is the large main grant mechanism at NIH, or the R21 mechanism. Also, there is a new announcement that just came out entitled Mechanistic Research on Complementary and Alternative Medicine and Natural Products, which is also initiated by NCCM, and it is really looking at mechanistic research in all these natural products like herbal medicines, botanicals, dietary supplements, and probiotics. Also, two new announcements that are almost out. We have the notice of intent to publish, so probably while we are still here, it's maybe already out there. It's with the Fogarty International Research Collaboration. And these are really good for complementary alternative medicine because, first, they are R03s, they are small grant mechanisms, and they encourage collaborations between researchers in the United States who have an R01 to collaborate with scientists in developing countries, in countries with low or middle income countries, so that they could do a collaborative research. And as we know, some of the complementary alternative medicines are really used in different countries. So I think this may really encourage some of the research to collaboration with developing countries. For additional information about our Office of Cancer Complementary Alternative Medicine, you can go to this link. And also, these are the links for funding opportunities at OCAM. And also, I think the other link you already, Wendy has already mentioned, which is the NIH funding link. And that's it. Thank you very much. And I forgot to say, I don't have any financial interests, so this is, I also am a government employee, so with no conflict of interest with this presentation. Thank you.
I was asking if your office does research or provides grants for research is it in conjunction with complementary treatment for conventional treatment, or do you also look at completely alternative treatments?
Both. We can either do completely alternative treatment, or you could do synergism. You look at whether if you're using a conventional treatment and using complementary therapy with it, whether it does some type of synergism, improves the effectiveness of a drug or that type of research.
And can you give an example of some of the traditional medicines you're looking at from developing
In treatment or in general? Well, the things that I have noticed a lot of research going on is curcumin. What else? Acupuncture, a lot of research in acupuncture going on, yoga, herbal medicine in general, many botanicals. So very different types, really.
How about hypnotherapy?
Pardon? Our announcements are open for everything. I don't recall recently seeing a hypnotherapy application, but as you know, the applications are up to the grantees and their interest areas, so whatever they're interested in. We try to put our announcement to be more overarching and open to
let the scientists kind of be more free to think of what they want to applaud for.
And I mean, you can always search the reporter database to see what hypnotherapy studies are currently funded. You can also search what we've ever funded across NIH as a whole. So you can do a search specifically with the search term hypnotherapy and find any grant that's ever been funded that includes hypnotherapy. So that reporter website is incredibly useful to be able to look and see. And I think they're going back through the past and trying to link in all the publications from the past as well. I don't know how far back they've gotten in terms of linking all that information in there, but you should be able to link to the publications eventually of those grants that were funded.
They have to realize we are only limited to cancer research, so the NCCM may have a much wider range of research because they focus on all diseases. So.
The RFP smaller grants, are they only applicable for diversity-based investigations?
No, I'm pretty sure, I mean, every funding opportunity announcement gives at the beginning the eligible institutions of who can apply. And I'm pretty sure most of them are open to nonprofits and academic institutions and even private institutions as well. So, but the specifics for each individual one are listed in, if you link into the funding opportunity towards the beginning, there's eligible institutions that provides that information. Oh yeah, we didn't mention, there's also small business innovative, or small business grant opportunities. There's the FBIR for Small Business Innovative Research, and STTR, the Small Business Technology Transfer Research Grants. And so those are for for-profit companies that meet the qualifications for small business. And there's many, many, many opportunities for those as well. The whole concept is to develop a commercial product for the FBIRs, and then for the technology transfers to get more projects out there. Yeah. SBIR, Small Business Innovative Research. Yeah. And I think all of our websites have links to the small business opportunities as well. So I know NCAM is always looking for good applications that get have good rigorous science that make it through peer review.
For SBIR, STTR, actually, there's an advantage that their funding is set aside. So they're really, you're probably, if you have a very good application, your chances of getting funded are pretty good.
Is it? Yeah. So does everybody know what set aside means? So set aside means that Congress has told us we have to set aside a certain portion of our budget to fund those specific types of programs. So every institute and center has a certain percentage that we have to spend on small business grants. So that's why we're always looking for really good science in coming into the Small Business Innovative Research Program. And if anybody has questions, I can give you the contact names at NCAM for who works with our small business programs. It's not a replacement. The R21, are you asking about the clinical R21 that NCAM used to have specifically? Okay. So we get this question a lot. So NCAM used, and I think NCI was, you guys were signed on to our clinical and basic R21 program. So we had a clinical R21 program that was available for a while that was 3 years and a little bit larger budget than the typical R21. With all of the changes that have gone on at NIH, they've really discouraged the institutes and centers to make what they call exceptions to the standard R21 format. So we can no longer go beyond 2 years, and we can no longer go beyond the $275,000 budget. And so for that reason, we don't think that that's a particularly good mechanism for early phase clinical research. It's quite hard to do a clinical trial in 2 years and on a budget of $275,000. You can do a proof of concept study under that type of grant mechanism. And the R21 is for exploratory and developmental research projects, which means that there's generally quite limited amounts of preliminary data for those types of projects. They generally are considered high risk, high reward types of projects. So you've got a novel idea that if it works, it could really change things. And so that's really what the R21 mechanism is for. The R34 is for where we've already got some pretty good data. This is how NCAM is using it. Every institute center uses the R34 very, very differently. So you really need to look at the specifics and the funding opportunity. NCAM is using it to identify areas where we have, there's We've identified specific priority areas that we're interested in where there's already pretty good pilot data to indicate that there may be benefit there. Yet there's still a little bit of work that needs to be done before a large clinical trial could be done. So for example, the probiotics research was up there. So the probiotic studies right now, because they have to get an IND with the FDA, which is an investigational new drug application, the studies that we funded early on are in adult phase one safety studies. So they're going to have to move through several other preliminary types of trials before they can do an efficacy study. So that's an area where we know the science is growing and building, and they're going to need to do those preliminary studies. So that's why we're using the R34, is to kind of figure out all of those steps that need to be justified in terms of what's the right dose, what's the right frequency, what's the right duration of treatment, what's the right comparison intervention, and get all of those things done before we would ever move forward to a phase three study. So we've really kind of narrowed down the areas that we're going to fund those, and we've really limited to just those specific priority areas.
So if so for our own one, if it doesn't have to go
No. You can come in. The R34 is really specifically for those priority areas only. And for that's how we're using it for this particular funding opportunity. There are many other institutes that use the R34 mechanism, and IDDK actually uses it as a cooperative agreement. They use it as a U34 mechanism, which I didn't talk about use, but use are a cooperative agreement instead of a research grant. And they take that process for any clinical trial. They require you to go through a 34 mechanism before you go into a U01 mechanism. So I can answer other specifics, but yeah.
What proportion are R01s, R03s, 21s, 34s, et cetera, within, and then the pay line the same across all of those?
Great question. So NCAM in the past, and I'll let you answer for NCI because it's totally different for NCI. Every student center, the balance is a little bit different. I think across the NIH, R01 is the predominant mechanism that's used. It's up to 5 years. There's technically no cap on the budget in each individual year, although if you're going to request more than $500,000 in direct costs, you have to get permission to come in. So for most of the ICs, the R01s are the dominant mechanism. I think in NCAM, ours has been the R21 for a number of years, but it's shifting towards more R01s. I think especially now that we've gotten rid of our own specific R21s and just using the NIH-wide R21, that our portfolio will move much more towards an R01 type of balance. But we also have center grants, PO1s and P30s and several other different types of funding mechanisms. Do you want to comment on OCAM?
So far I think I noticed more R21s. We're starting to have a few R03s. We have not as many R01s as in traditional kind of offices at NCI research offices, because a lot of the research is still in its relatively preliminary stages. We have a few UO1s and a PO1 application. So, but in general, I would say R21s have been the majority of our applications.
Yeah. I have a question about the
non-routine
program. So you
So it's an NIH-wide loan repayment program, and it's specifically, there's several different programs that are available, one for pediatric research, I think, one for clinical research, and there may be another one for looking at health disparities, but you can check the loan repayment website. There are very specific criteria for who's eligible. I think if you're doing at least 50% of your time doing research, and that has to be non-profit research. It can't be for a for-profit company. But all of the specifics are in there in terms of the website. The details are quite specific, so I don't want to go into those. You have to have a certain amount of debt that qualifies you in order to apply. And it is a quite competitive process in terms of applying for it, but it pays off your loans. So the first two-year contract pays off half, up to a cap of $35,000 a year. So it can pay off as much as $70,000. If your debt is $140,000 or more in the first 2 years. So it's quite an amazing program. The whole idea behind it, why NIH did it, was they wanted to encourage some of the best minds to stay in research. They were finding, especially among clinicians who had very high debt, that they would go into clinical practice because they could make so much more money than they could in research. And because of their loan debt, they were going into private practice or into clinical practice and not doing research because they wouldn't be able to pay back their loans. And so this was a way to try to entice people to stay in research and that they would pay back the loans for them. So it's a service contract in terms of how it works. You have to be doing research, actively involved in research to continue to be able to get the loan payment.
Other questions?
Yeah.
The cycle from beginning to grant achievement is roughly 2 to 3 years, typically. And in other words, someone submits a grant, goes again, et cetera, typically a few years. What is it in grant?
So the hope with enhancing peer review is it won't be 2 to 3 years. The idea is to fund good science early. And so part of that is getting rid of the A2 application. So you only have 2 application rounds. I don't know if there's solid data, but there was a feeling that people were waiting for, you know, the A2 to, in order to give it a good score. And there was definitely score creep, and there's been some really interesting work looking at that. So I think some of the institutes are taking, like NHLBI is taking a really interesting approach. They have a differential pay line depending on which submission it is. So they fund to a further percentile. I think they fund to the 15th percentile on first submissions, to the 10th percentile for the second submission, and to the 5th percentile for the 3rd submission. Although this was the last round of the 3rd submission, so that may alter things a little bit. But their idea is that if it's scored at the 15th percentile the first time around, it's probably a really good grant. And so they're trying to fund good science early. I don't know if any of the other institutes or centers have picked up on that idea, but I think, you know, for early stage investigators, we tend to go a little bit further out.
SBI just basically goes through the pay line, and then sometimes if there's additional funding, then we look at the best applications for a request and exception if they are very close to the pay line and they have, say, a good impact factor or whatever. So we try to still, I mean, we're advocates of the grantees. We try to encourage them to get, you know, to be helping them as much as we can to get funded.
Yeah. The other thing you asked is if we have a different pay line earlier. You asked for different funding mechanisms. And at NCHEM, I should say that in fiscal year 2011, we don't have a budget from Congress yet. So we don't have a pay line yet for 2011 because we don't know what our appropriation will actually be. In the past, though, there's definitely been a differential that R01s actually get paid further at NCHEM. So I think we were funding to maybe the 20th percentile, maybe. It's posted on our website. You can go back for each of the different years and look for R01s and R21s. For our training grants, there is no set pay line. We look at those each individually in terms of the merit of the application and, you know, overall goals. But I would say that the priority areas, so keeping up with what the strategic plan is and what NCHEM is interested in funding, sometimes, like you said, there's a pay line, and sometimes we'll go a little bit beyond that for things that really fit with what we want to fund and what we want to do, what we've identified as our priority areas. So sometimes that happens. Depends always on our budget. Yeah.
During the last 10, 15 years, I've had a result about 80% of energy therapy, and I've published in the Qigong Therapy School, and then I had an opportunity to go to the ready to be published. One is meridian therapy, another one is energy therapy. Within the energy therapy, I have 8 different types of energy therapy. And I am interested in testing the different combinations among these 8 different fields. Now, what would you suggest me to do? Today I had some kind of a feeling that I should hold my publication until I get a grant, something like that. Because I find this is up to listen to two of you as a lecture or speak. I find that I have a golden mind in my hand. I probably should not give away. So what would you suggest me to do? For professional point of view, I realize that, oh boy, I have a lot of things in my head, and I should not. What would you suggest?
So So my first question
in
would be...
In terms of a more affordable test.
Yes.
Why is that required?
So my first question would be, we have conversations all the time with individuals who have very specific questions like this. So I'll just kind of take you through kind of the scenario of how we work with this. So my first question is always, you know, do you have the facilities to really be able to carry out the research study that you would want to do? And do you personally have experience in having successfully received NIH funding? And oftentimes the answer to that question is yes or no, but often it's no, I've never been funded. This is my first time applying. We get a lot of first-time applicants in NCAM. And so what I always encourage people to do is find a collaborator who's been successful in getting funding, because they understand the system of how to write a research grant and how to effectively communicate to the reviewers of an idea and how to make the balance of this is something that has potential really huge significant impact. And yet the equipoise or the balance of, well, I have this clinical experience, we haven't done the really rigorous study to document and, you know, with scientific method to show that it's beneficial. And so I think for CAM practitioners in particular, it's very difficult to walk that line, because what we see in clinical practice is it works, but not all of our patients come back. And so we often see the success stories in our practice because those are the patients who often come back to us. We don't have 100% follow-up on everyone that we've ever worked with to know how many people improve and how many people don't improve with our therapies. And so I think that's the hard part for CAM practitioners coming in, is everybody they see is a success. And so they know that it's going to work. And when a reviewer reads something like, I'm going to prove that this works, they kind of question what your impartiality is in doing the study. And so that's where partnering with someone who brings that aspect, you bring the absolute expertise in knowing the intervention and knowing how it works and how you're going to actually do it. And your partner then with a scientist who brings the rigor and the methodology to evaluate it in an objective way is a really great thing. And so a collaborative team like that can be incredibly successful. And so what I often do is refer people back to that reporter website, because you can do a search by state, by institution, to find researchers in your community that you could potentially collaborate with. You can look through all the grants that they've ever been funded with, who's doing research in an area that kind of fits with what your interests are, and all of their contact information is available on there on the website. So you've got their email, usually their phone number, to be able to contact and try to build a collaboration with them. In terms of which mechanism, which funding opportunity to go for, if there isn't published peer-reviewed research, I would probably recommend that you start with exploratory developmental grants to get that pilot data done and collected in an objective sort of format where you can do the prospective follow-up on every single person who gets the intervention, so that you can look at the overall success in everybody and not just the people that continue to come back. So that's the general approach that I take with a lot of people. And I think one of the challenges that we face in the area of complementary medicine, and it applies to Qigong, it applies to yoga, it applies to a lot of different things, is so someone will propose, I'm doing this new yoga study. I've got this new form of yoga that I want to see how it works. And then they reference all these other forms of yoga saying how beneficial yoga is. But what they're studying is a new form of yoga. That's not what any of that data is based on. And so you've got to recognize that if you're studying a novel form of an intervention that's never been studied before, it's a novel form of the intervention. And while there's been studies on other forms of energy therapies or other things, what you are doing hasn't been studied before. So it really is exploratory developmental at that point.
Okay. About a follow-up question?
Yes.
I would like to hear Dr. regarding the cancer part, because I really have a
right. The main part is...
Another one is that anyone who are qualified, know how to write an NIH grant, please contact me.
Well, everybody on the reporter website does, because everybody on there is funded.
Yeah.
So that's a great place to start, because all of them have a grant.
Well, two things I could mention. One was one of the slides that Dr. Weber mentioned, but where you can look and see all the factors that the reviewers use to evaluate your application. So it may be a great idea, but it may not be a good team, or it may not be a good method. So you have to really balance all the components that a reviewer is looking at. The second part is really very important, is basically what they call standardization and validation.
Many yogas are so many different kinds. For a research person, maybe you see, as Wendy said, they are very successful, but for somebody to give you a good score in a grant, you have to prove that this type of yoga or this type of manipulative therapy has been standardized, so that if some other scientist comes back and wants to replicate your study to show that it's valid, that they can go back and use the exact same mechanism or yoga or therapy that you have used. Sometimes we see applications that are not really standardized. So, and they're disappointed that they're not getting a good score, although they may have a good reason to do a good study, because they need to standardize it. It takes a lot of effort to standardize certain camps, really, and that's a big challenge. So once you standardize it and you make sure that it can be validated, you're giving the reviewers or the science in general, the research, the ability to get some substantive, concrete results that you can replicate and you can prove as evidence-based research that this can happen and this really helps your patients. So.
Thank you. I'll talk to both of you immediately because I have a lot.
We'll save 10 minutes at the end for them to be here, for people to come up, just so individual questions like that. And again, it leads to, and then we should probably keep it to two or three final.
In the laboratory situation where you said that there's no baseline, is quality data acceptable or it has to be quantitative?
We see both. We see applications for both qualitative and quantitative applications come in. I think if you're using qualitative methods, you need to use the standardized qualitative approaches that are well-documented methodology. Because there will be reviewers on the panel that know what the qualitative methodology should be. So you can't just say, oh, I'm going to go talk to people and see what they think and go from there. The reviewers will know the absolute methodology of how you do it, what software is used for the theme analysis. I mean, they'll know all of those details, but it could be either.
I just wanted to make comment in support of your message to really collaborate with others, with researchers. The slide that you showed with the New England Journal article on Tai Chi fibromyalgia, the person who did the intervention, Ron Ronis, he was the Qigong Tai Chi master of the community who wanted to have this sort of research. And so he partnered and he sought out research at Tufts University to collaborate with him on developing this study. They did this for years, and now it's in the New England Journal. It's something that we're all very proud of. And then the other piece that I just wanted to ask you to maybe talk a little bit more on is the Career Development Award, the CAM Award, in which CAM practitioners can actually go out and learn how to do research. So if a CAM practitioner wants to learn to be a researcher or wants to take their career to another level and look at and be a researcher, you can actually apply to those awards. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So at NCAM, we have a couple of different funding opportunities. And when you go to our training website, there's a link specifically for CAM practitioners to find out what you're eligible for. And part of it depends a little bit on what kind of training you have. So anyone who has a CAM doctorate degree or a doctoral degree, you're qualified for the postdoctoral fellowships. And we have funded institutional training fellowships. So it's a T32 program is what it is, so it often funds a number of different postdocs at a specific institution. And CAM practitioners are often eligible for those postdoctoral positions. So for example, I know, as I mentioned, I used to be at Bastyr. University of Bastyr has an institutional training grant. We had our students go to the University of Arizona, to the University of Minneapolis. We had students at many different institutions, either on an institutional training grant in a postdoctoral position, or that they've written their own F32 individual postdoctoral fellowship and been trained all over the country in different places. So anyone, naturopathic doctors, chiropractic doctors, doctors of osteopathy who are studying manipulation specifically, not if they're doing surgery or other kinds of conventional care, are all qualified. The DAOM programs would qualify for those as well. If you have a PhD in a science-related field and then a clinical training in another CAM profession like acupuncture, that would qualify you for those as well. So that's the postdoctoral programs. Then there's also the Career Development Award, the K-Series Award, which postdoctoral fellows are limited to 3 years, and the Career Development Awards are 3 to 5 years of funding is what they are, and so it provides you more time to help you transition to an independent career. And I've actually got resources up here of all the different K programs and funding for graduate students and fellowships and people mid to senior careers as well. So there are a number of different training programs, and I think that's something that NCAM has, I think, invested quite heavily in. I was actually funded on the Career Development Award before I joined NCAM, and I think it's a really great way to train people and give them the protective time to really learn how to do research, because any clinical training program trains you to be a clinician. It doesn't train you to be a researcher, and so you really need that protective time and additional education to become a good researcher. So most of the R01s, and you'll have to look at each individual one, but most of the grants across NIH are open to anyone with the, I can't remember what the language is, anyone with the qualifications to do it. So it doesn't limit you by degree. You'll need to demonstrate, that you have experience, that you have a track record, that, those are things that are part of the evaluation of the investigator. So if you look at any funding opportunity announcement, one of the things that I can't stress enough is when you look at a funding opportunity announcement, it looks like at the end that it's all just boilerplate, that it all looks like it's the same for every grant. It's not. You really want to look at the section that talks about review criteria, because often they add very specific review criteria for that specific funding opportunity. We do that a lot at NCAM, where it says, that the reviewers will be looking for this. And if you didn't look there, it's essentially your grading sheet is what is provided there at the end of the funding opportunity announcement. And so it'll describe what kind of qualifications they're looking for when it comes to the investigators. But we definitely have funded many people that don't have MDs or PhDs in terms of research. It will state whether a multi-PI is allowed on the individual funding opportunity. So there's usually a specific section that says whether it's allowed. Most of them do allow it. If you include a multi-PI plan, multi-principal investigator plan, you do have to include an additional element as to how you will manage the sharing of responsibilities. And that's one of the things then that's evaluated by the reviewers.
So I want to thank our speakers tonight. They'll be here for another 10 minutes if you have individual questions to ask. There's also a business meeting at 6. If you would like to join our SPIG ACHB, we'd love to have you as members. Thank you so much for coming.
Thanks.
Maybe for any of these studies, chemistry, because generally, Let's talk about that.
For $1,500,000, they must give those away. I'm sure there are a lot of people, but
I know.
Yeah, that is where that significance and innovation looks like, and then how we really. What I think is one part innovation. I'm not very sure. We can still talk about anything about it. But for part that you've at least, for example, now we have done some more on a skater point. Done some work to show that you can successfully implement this in the
Let's definitely chat about that. And I, since my
thought in here was a state one, they remember from Michigan State.
There's a political one as
well. And Wilmore and I have a block ratio.
Oh, yeah, she's right.
Actually, you have the right in your cover letter, and that means many of the other
don't know. We have the right.
Yeah.
a hard time finding publications.
Great, great.
So maybe I'm getting ready now.
I'm getting ready to tell
the publication. Yes. Okay, such a pleasure meeting you.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'm sorry you can't join us.
Yeah, it's just this is like.
I understand.
So yeah, but we'll definitely stay in touch.
That would be fantastic.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Such a short visit.
Great. That was great.
I appreciate it.
Okay.
We met actually in Norway.
Oh, lucky.
Good to see you. Thank you very much.
Yes,
take care. Okay.
Thank you so much for talking.
Yeah, but I'll have what time is your talk?
8:30 here tomorrow.
Oh, that's too early.
I know, it's the first one in it.
But maybe I can connect
you
with him.
But the lights here in my information, I have a smaller set of slides that's on this for this public tech for this presentation.
I'll try to connect you
right
with
now,
this.
Just shows a whole medical system's request that really Mexican traditional medicine needs to be considered as a whole medical system.
Yes.
Because it has the roots development. And so I'm at the University of Cuernavaca, I'm getting my certificate as a practitioner.
Excellent.
So, but it has hundreds of herbs, it's ritual, and so a lot of that same activities are very similar to any other indigenous whole systems practice.
Actually, very interested in putting something for all the diverse populations, Camus,
right.
Mexican, Native American, Appalachian, anybody in the state.
Especially given the low utilization, not just of health services, but especially mental health services. I mean, we literally have to walk up and down the street and say, if you have nervios, if you have attack of the anxiety, come and talk to us. Because there's such a stigma about coming to get mental health services.
I'm sure.
But they'll go to a curandera like no problem.
But then they could, what was that complementary therapy that was used for depression, and then it turned out it was liver and
St. John's wort.
Yeah.
So you have to have, actually...
Are there any really research done on Mexican complementary therapies? It's really
yes, but it's not here. It actually is mostly, Peru has a nice sized bank of information. Some of the other Latin,
Spanish,
and Ecuador,
right?
It's in Spanish, so you have to be bilingual. It does help to be bilingual.
But like,
I have a really good translation program.
But the Chinese literature in translating some of those.
They actually recently had a complementary...
The Chinese are more advanced in CAM, and they're trying to switch with the language and the communication. And, I mean, most of our international researchers, I would say majority, if not all, is China, because they have all these, they already have the infrastructure set, and they are very assertive about,
It's more the Latin American, it's still the same traditional practices, but there's actually more of a research base in, say, Ecuador or Peru, and just a little bit that's now starting to come up in Mexico.
Research, and if you want to do a search and do, say, a review, you don't find anything to do a review with. So we have to create it from scratch, which is a good thing, because now the field is open.
Yeah, I think we found some of the international studies, too, that they just read that. The most rigorous studies. And so, and with the Chinese ones, so we translate some of them, we do an acupuncture for neutropenia, and they just weren't high quality. But that was still supportive data, at least to say, look, there was a design of a study.
How do you
an acupuncturist from China. Yeah, he's
oh, wow.
We had another acupuncturist verify another.
I'm having to just really dig in, and I've been in Yuma now 7 years, so my Spanish is where I can have regular interactions, but when you go and talk to at university level and trying to interact, then it's like, okay, can you say that word again? Can you break that down for me in Spanish? But yeah, I just finished my doctoral exams, and my whole premise was, there's lots of information that I have from Uruguay and Peru, we don't have anything from Mexico and Central America.
Yeah.
So there's this whole untapped region that is creeping on up
into
the U.S. that we need to figure out.
The project was use of CAM in Mexico, in Hispanic, in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, oh, I can't find publications.
You have to either be along the border where, like, it's 30 minutes to Mexico. So I can go right over to Mexico
and
have a nice
Babylon
does a decent job And the class that I'm taking now for the certification, all the textbook is completely in Spanish. So I go through, and when I have an issue, then I email them, and they'll try to help me with figuring out a word, but, yeah.
Can I just borrow you for a second?
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
we'll see you tomorrow.
Peter Griffin.
I can give you the links because NCI is huge.
Yeah.
Well, I originally was supposed to present like here in this Wendy session, was responding and we went back and forth back and forth.
I don't know much about my advisor wanted
this
is NCI, it's a whole program which has multiple program directors who only do that. So usually I try to just refer you to the expert. I can give you the general idea of what their BIR is. Are you a non-profit organization?
I wear a couple of different hats. Yeah. But
were you here at the...
I've been trying to kind of bump into y'all. Yeah, that was, you know, it's really... You know, they need to look at it.
So what
people are getting better traditionally than they got to find
out. You have to just say HBIR.
There's enough people, I know particularly Tai Chi, and I have three students myself, I know three other people that had remission of cancer. Tai Chi, particularly one of them, she was in the middle of all the therapy, she had 2 weeks left to live, and you know, it turned around.
It's amazing.
I can tell you what they do. I don't know what the acronyms really stand for, but it's basically for businesses who have wanted to develop a technology type device. They're a non-profit organization. It's a regular business. They basically contact them and they go through the whole application. They actually do also free training. They go to different parts of the United States. Because there is a whole program more complex than that, but basically. So they go and spend the whole day with the, give you the whole training of what they do and how you can apply and all.
So this is sort of how they call it, attached with the Small Business Administration in some way. Because it sounds like a Small Business Administration program.
I'm not sure. I really don't know their research. I mean, they are center like all of us, but they are specifically dealing with companies.
Interesting.
And they have what mentioned the set aside, which is a certain percentage of all our budgets go to that SBIR, SDTR, and they're supposed to spend it on you guys, on the applicants. So. And one thing I know, because I attended one of, they had a reorganization also, so that, I mean, I attended their training before they reorganized, and I remember that one of the issues was, like, your patent, if you have an idea, and they find you, some of the applicants were worried, would the government take their patent? They don't. To my memory, it was like, it's your project. So they just try to help.
This is very interesting.
Who knew? And they showed some of the very interesting devices that we use on a daily basis that came out of this program.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's very
interesting. So tell me about yourself.
Well, I've done a lot of different things, and I'm at a cusp where I'm deciding which route to follow.
Mm-hmm.
So I've written a bunch of books, and I have a couple, and I have an idea for
a writer.
Yeah, and I have an idea for a, and an activist. I did a lot of gun control work for many, many years, and but I let that go.
Very successful. Mm-hmm.
I would say we haven't been successful, although I had a discussion about this with somebody the other day who said, you know, but we didn't change the legislation, you know, the NRA has got that. But I have this idea for some kind of a complementary intervention, and this is just all new to me, and it's very interesting to, this is a, were you here for this panel? Were you here for the discussion? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is very, very, the array of things that people are talking about, and this sort of, the difficulty, like you're talking about finding out what is the tradition of Mexican immigrants to the United States in terms of these guys. I mean, I live in a neighborhood in Brooklyn, which is less than a mile from a really big center of Mexican immigrants.
I think
you know, because it's traditional, doesn't necessarily mean it's education.
Right. That's true.
So
our role is really to know about it and to study it.
Yeah, yeah.
When I came on board, I just joined this office a little bit, 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in NCI also, but I'm a medical epidemiologist, so I was in the epidemiology and genetics research program for like 5 years, 4.5 years to be exact. But I had worked with the director of OCAM way back, and my dissertation is on complementary therapy, so I have a personal interest in complementary therapies. So when this opportunity came up, I thought it was nice to leave. But it's very challenging.
It's complicated because so much of, I mean, I don't know what percentage, but it seems like a lot of it is really, you know, alternative. I mean, I'm assuming we're talking about vitamins and herbal therapies and the sort of ingested.
Right.
The sort of equivalent of a pill, right?
Not only. I mean, we have, if you look on our website,
right.
We have the definitions of the therapies. We have about 12 different kinds.
So where is music therapy in this?
It's actually some of my biggest interests, music therapy and art therapy, because I'm a product of art therapy, because I was diagnosed, I had a big scare for ovarian mass. Thank God it was benign. But during the process,
art therapy got you through.
Art therapy, I discovered art. I mean, I loved it all the time, but I never realized that I could really be a painter. And it really helped me tremendously. There is an interest in music therapy.
So where does that fit?
I think the
realm of the government funding of these things.
The Office of Cancer Survivorship has mentioned an interest. And actually, I think also, I'm not sure where they are with it, but I remember a discussion that the director of the Office of Cancer Survivorship was interested in. Her name is Julia Rowland. I don't know if she has proceeded with it or not, but I know like a year ago there was some email communication about music therapy.
Yeah.
I tried to do art therapy myself. It wasn't very successful.
You just told me it was successful. Oh, you mean
no, it was successful for me, but I tried to put an announcement for people to do it, for grantees to submit applications. It wasn't because
it's only on booking.
The main challenge was my director, my boss, didn't think it was,
legitimate.
I think because the standardization, how do you standardize art therapy?
Right.
You can't tell people painters or not painters. You could still say
you could say an hour. You could do it by time. You could do it by medium.
My thought was to put something where the patients themselves who are taking, say, chemotherapy, and they're very stressed and depressed or whatever, if they could really be the ones who would take, do like a trial where one group could not take art therapy and one group does and see the outcome.
No, I've been taking, just out of curiosity, I live in New York, I'm taking a class at the New School for Social Research in Music Therapy. It's the least academic thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, the first session, there was like kindergarten, there was a box of musical instruments, and there were three of us of our age, and the rest are young people, and I've also never been in a school class where nobody asked questions. I mean, I could be asking questions for 2 hours, but like, this is a very strange, some of them are musicians, some of them are singers, some of them are, but it's a very hard, to understand what's going on, and they talk in the literature about it. Also, talks around the process. It's like it's a little touchy feeling, because it's very hard to describe art and music and language.
Unless you find a scientist who loves music,
well, I'm sure there are
many. Who understands? Yeah, we actually have at an NCI. We have Dr. Martin Brown. He is an accomplished violinist, and he is the head of behavior, I don't know the exact branch, but I think something within the health behavior.
Because they talk about it, particularly in regard to mental health. In this slight, it's almost poetic language, it's like there's a sort of integration, there's a lifting, there's a transport, the transportation of the person to another place, which enables them to feel safe, which enables them to open up, which enables them...
Which is actually what happened to me.
I think it's real, but it's the description of it.
I think it's a trance when you are doing your art that you love. It has to be coming from the heart. If it's not from the heart, it's not going to work. I think it, if you're stressed out, it elevates you to this world of music or art,
right,
where you don't really feel the stressors. You just focus on the process.
You know, my husband is a really serious cyclist. And I don't bike the way he does, but I swim. So there's a wonderful pool. I'm staying at the Hyatt. There's a big pool, not big, but it's a lap pool. And this thing happens to me when I swim. I go in, I'm thinking about all this stuff, and there's some point in the activity when you're just in the moment.
Yes.
And somehow it feels like a relief, like all that stuff that's always in your head has a chance to go rearrange itself.
Yeah.
It's like magic. It just goes and it sorts itself out.
Which means you love swimming.
Yeah, well, it's like sleep.
Yeah,
it's what I think the function
when
of sleep is.
When you lay down, you're when you sleep, when you're swimming, I know
zing,
the feeling,
zing.
And you hear the water just like dun dun.
Yeah, so for some people it's just so there's some quality of the music therapy, and maybe the art therapy. I don't know much, but I think does the same thing.
Absolutely.
I think it takes your focus away from your pain and your anxiety.
Yes.
And you're focused on this other thing, which enables some kind of healing to go on.
Yes.
Which is completely like, I hate this kind of language, it's like completely touchy-feely language. But anyway, the thing that I'm thinking about exploring, which I'm very protective of, so I haven't told anybody yet what this idea is, but it's like walking, it's a simple activity, and I think it has potential, like music therapy does.
I agree. I think Julia may be the right person at this point. I mean, I definitely would, if she's in... Julia Rowland, I think, would be a good contact. You reminded me of this. I may have to talk to her and ask her if she has proceeded with it or not. The music therapy. Nobody really mentioned art therapy except me.
It's interesting because it's considered in... I mean, I think, are art therapists licensed? Music therapists licensed? They're beginning to talk about licensure. This is interesting to me that acupuncture, which I suppose is physiologic, but it seems to me a much more opaque mechanism than something like music, which seems...
Well, this is quantitative versus qualitative, which is what, when I was talking to the gentleman about, like, he has to standardize. This was really... Yes.
I've been doing some video clips. I told you I'm going to do a little web TV thing about people doing interesting crap. Maybe I'll talk to you. That would be fun. Are you around tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm here till... I'm leaving on Wednesday.
So I was at a round table this morning. He has this thing about clapping hands. Have you ever heard of this? So I went to his round table. He's very famous about it. 2,000 claps, but not... Not like the opera, right? But claps, like a whole body.
Oh, yes. That's exercise.
But 2,000 takes 15 minutes. And he is...
2,000?
2,000.
That doesn't take more than 15 minutes.
He says it takes 15
really?
Minutes. And his, you know, he's got this whole story about how it's brain integrating, and it's preventive, and it's, you know, your negative emotions will... out and like Shakespeare's negative
good idea. You know, it's funny that you mentioned this because I work in the office for very long hours and I feel it's starting to take its effect on my health. And I said, we were doing all this camp and nobody came up with office exercise.
Nobody, have you tried to eat at AKHA? Have you tried to get a decent meal at AKHA? You can't, this is impossible. I ordered salad, I was 3 days worth of salads from some salad place.
Only please.